everybody has biases. People make judgments every day about one another, about opportunities, politics, and the stock market. This is because when we analyze something, we put our observations through a variety of filters created by our experiences that can sometimes make our decisions biased. It's these same behavioral patterns that can also influence investing. Here to tell us more is Craig Bassinger. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Richardson GMP. Hello there.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
Is this the soft, fuzzy, touchy, warm, gushy part of investing when really all you want to do is crunch numbers day and night?
Well, let's just start by there's more than enough people already crunching numbers.
Yeah.
You know, trying to get an edge and running a discounted cash flow model on any company, if there's 50 people doing it, I just don't see where that edge is going to be. However, what I think is changing, and behavioral finance is leading into this, is that we all have biases, and they help us get through everyday life. They're not actually bad things. They help us process an immense amount of information, and they usually help us get to the right decision. However, when it comes to investing, most often those shortcuts actually lead you to making mistakes and investment mistakes.
Now, let's talk a bit more about the benefits of bias, because mostly it's used in a pejorative way. It's a racial bias. It's a discrimination of some sort. But our brain works this way for a reason. Why?
Yeah, well, there is way too much stimulus out there. We need shortcuts to be able to process information. If even driving down the road, you know, you're not paying attention to every car around you, but somehow there's a shortcut in your mind that if the car on the right-hand lane starts to veer into your lane, you automatically react. You weren't ever actually even paying attention to it. This is a shortcut, and these kind of shortcuts, again, help us in everyday life, but they also, and you're right, the word bias has a terrible negative
Yep.
connotation, but the shortcuts in everyday life actually help us most often get to the right answer. The problem is investing is more of a contrarian business, and usually it's doing the opposite of what feels right is usually, when it comes to investing, the right thing. And because of that, it leads to more mistakes caused by the bias.
So let's talk about a couple of examples. Confirmation bias. How would you define it, and how is it relevant to investing?
Well, confirmation bias, actually, even outside of investing, is probably the most prevalent bias that exists right now. And that's thanks to great people at Facebook and Google.
You know, say more about that. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you Google something and search something and actually imply what your interests are, you start getting, you've probably noticed, you start getting pop-up ads, and
yep.
your filters are then run through their algos to give you more things that you're going to that you believe in or
right.
agree with.
And politically, within your Facebook group, it's quite common to be friends with people who share your view of the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they make no qualms about it. They're doing it because they're trying to get ad clicks.
Yeah.
And they know if they show you more information that you already believe with, you will have a higher tendency to click on that ad and give them a nickel or a dime or whatever the going rate is. The problem with investing is, and we run into it, our whole team, we're very positive on the U.S. dollar. We have been for probably the last 2.5 years. Yet our whole team is in that camp. And that can cause you to sort of miss things. You start to only read reports that actually agree with you. You tend to look at reports that disagree with your views and sort of discount them, going, oh, that's wrong because of this or the other factor. When in reality, investing, unfortunately, it's a very uncertain business. It's a game of probabilities. Actually going out and telling people, like, we believe we're 70% right and 30% chance we're wrong. That's never good marketing.
So how do you counteract that? Do you say to one of the partners, you need to come to the next meeting with the bear case on the U.S. dollar?
Yeah. So
hold nothing back.
What we do in our team is we'll have a bull bear argument where people are assigned which side they're going to be on. And they have to come in full guns a-blazing based on how they've been allocated. But the other aspect, you know, this is where confirmation bias is actually pretty easily mitigated to a degree, is that once you actually start considering the other aspects, you will actually start to read the other views and start to look at other sides. And it actually encourages more critical thinking, an activity that is woefully missing in our society today.
Framing is another bias. Define that, and how does that manifest itself in investing?
Well, framing, and I'll group that in with anchoring, is largely caused by people's adherence to what they paid for something. And, you know, there's no question what you paid for it matters because you either made money or you lost money. But people take it very personally. And if they paid $100 for something and it's now $80, they sit there and they go, no, no, I won't sell this until it's back to $100, right, even though I don't like it anymore. And they're anchored to that original price. And that's obviously dangerous, because if the thesis has changed and the outlook has changed, everything's changed. And even the reason you bought it at $100 has changed. And you're sitting there suffering from what people call get-evenitis. You have a high probability of actually letting your losers do more damage to your portfolio than they should if you are able to just say, it didn't work, I'm moving on and going to the next stage. And that's probably, for most investors, anchoring and loss aversion, those are some of the bigger biases that they really should be trying to overcome.
There is also a real susceptibility we have as investors in following the news cycle and the trend of the day. So I've been around for a long time. I've covered the dot-com boom and bust, Bitcoin, investment trusts, or income trusts, all those different things. How do you ensure that you aren't following where those bulls are running?
Well, as far as a herd mentality, yeah, where everybody's jumping on the same bandwagon, and there's no question, the herd mentality makes us feel safer because there's strength.
We're
numbers.
All going over that cliff. It's going to be great.
We all love Nortel. It's fine. It'll be okay. Everybody can't be wrong. Well, in retrospect. But, the herd mentality, and you're right, because that can draw people all crowded into one investment strategy, one investment approach, and that can cause very detrimental aspects, especially if they're primarily focused on that. And getting outside of the herd is very difficult. And trying to be contrarian is difficult. And it's more of a lonely. I mean, the word contrarian, you're going to be lonely because you're going to have views that differ from other people. But by and large, that's where most of the returns are made. This behavioral finance and behavioral economics, it's a rising research discipline and it's getting more and more into the mainstream, but it's not new. I mean, Benjamin Graham, Warren Buffett, they were all out there saying, buy when the market is fearful and sell when the market is greedy. That is emotions. It's just, it's been such a long time that people started to actually look primarily or predominantly at the emotions and the other side of the trade. And is that person making a mistake to try and make money?
One of the other dynamics that industry folks have to deal with is the fact that they're measured. And so in the talk about Nortel, I know that was ages ago, but it drove the Canadian index to a point at which if you didn't hold Nortel, there was no way you were going to be able to deliver those returns. How do you as a money manager work to deliver returns knowing that you may not be holding the stock du jour, the one everybody's talking about?
Yeah, and today's example, of course, would be the FANG stocks in the U.S.
Yep.
If you don't own those five or six names in the U.S. market, you're down this year. If you own just them, you're up considerably. And the market in the U.S. is up sort of 4 or 5% at this point. So it's being driven by a handful of names. So obviously, that has concerns for a portfolio manager. Now, if you can rise above that and not actually measure yourself to a benchmark every 6 months, every 12 months, then you can easily defeat it just acknowledge what the market's doing. I think today, I don't have a U.S. pure strategy, but if I were looking at a pure U.S. money manager that was beating the market today over the last number of years, I would be extremely fearful of them because that means they're taking such big bets on some of these very high momentum names that have been really dominating for the past 7-8 years that the risk in that portfolio is probably immense.
If you were to give one piece of advice for an average retail investor to try and manage the negative effect of the biases that they hold, what would it be?
I would do everything you can do to try and avoid performance chasing, which is part of the herd mentality. As far as if it's been doing well, doesn't mean it's going to keep doing well. You need to understand why things work in some markets, why they don't work in others, and really build your portfolios with that premise in mind.
Interesting. Well, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate your insight.
Thanks for having me.
Craig Bassinger, Chief Investment Officer at Richardson GMP, on the biases that can sometimes how we invest.